Well, good Thursday to you. Hope you have had a good week. You remained dry during our little encounter with a tropical storm earlier this week. And now the sun is shining, the birds are singing, and it's time for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. Oh, there's no real connection, you know, between the two, but we like to think there is. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for joining us by way of radio waves, also telephone lines, internet machines, and all of the other multiple ways we have to communicate with each other nowadays. 414-1234 is the local telephone number. If you'd like to join the conversation at any point this morning, 800-926-8809 is the long-distance number twixt us and you. Perspectives at WFSU.org if email is your preferred form of contact. And our Twitter account is at WFSU Perspective. Well, just this morning as I was getting ready to come into the station, I saw an ad for some product or other on TV. And, you know, I really don't recall which product it was because I was just so enchanted with the imagery that was coming across the screen. It was a happy couple, both obviously retired. And, man, they were living the good life. They were spending all this happy time with the grandkids, and they were walking hand in hand on some glorious beach somewhere. And then they cut to them dining in what appeared to be like a five-star restaurant perhaps in Paris or some other glorious international destination. Their lives just look so wonderful. And then I thought ahead to today's Perspectives and kind of realized that this sort of existence is not a reality for many seniors, and in fact, too many of our seasoned citizens live a life that includes things like deprivation and isolation and maybe even terrible abuse. This morning on Perspectives, we're going to be talking about that with a terrific panel of folks who spend their working hours and beyond focusing on what can go terribly wrong in the lives of older people and doing everything they can to rectify those wrongs. So we start off with a lady who helped put all this together, and for that, she has my sincerest thanks, Laura Copeland, Elder Abuse Prevention Coordinator for Planning and Service Area 2 with the Area Agency on Aging for North Florida Incorporated. Thanks so much, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
And it's great to have you here. Right next door to you, Wendy Fletcher Altman, Senior Human Services Specialist with Adult Protective Services of the Florida Department of Children and Families. And Wendy, you're over in Bay County, right?
Yes, I live there, but I'm for the whole Northwest region.
Oh, wow, which encompasses a huge chunk of real estate, right?
Correct. Tallahassee to Pensacola.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks for coming, Wendy. Really appreciate
that. Thanks for having us.
Right over here on my left, your right, is Mike Milliken with the Florida Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. Mike, thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
And we wrap up here with Tallahassee elder law attorney and yoga teacher extraordinaire, Twyla Sketchley. And in full disclosure, the Sketchley Law Firm is a longtime underwriter of WFSU. Twyla, so good to see you.
Good to see you. And I'm so happy to be with these guys. These guys are awesome.
Well, yeah. And then you got to blow out of here right after the show. And you're on the way to Tampa. What's going on there?
The Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys is having their statewide summer conference, and at that conference we talk about a lot of these abuse issues. And at that conference I'm actually a sponsor because starting tomorrow I'm rolling out a nationwide website and consulting program on the abuse, neglect, exploitation, and maltreatment of elders and what other states and professionals can do to prevent it and help consumers to prevent it.
So. Can't wait to see that when that gets up. Sounds like a great resource. So thank you for sharing that. Laura Copeland, let's start off with you here because Twyla was just talking about the kind of the list of horribles that can go on. And as I indicated at the outset, for most of us, we can't conceive of that. Who could – grandma, for crying out loud, who in the name of God would do something like that? How widespread is this?
Well, unfortunately, it is a more common issue than people realize. Last year, the Department of Children and Families, their Adult Protective Services Unit, investigated over 50,000 cases, and those are the only ones that were reported. National statistics say that for every one case that is reported, 23 go unreported. So this issue is happening all around us, can happen to anyone at any time. And so that's my job, is to work on ways to prevent this from happening in the first place.
Okay, we'll get into that in just a moment. But Wendy Fletcher Altman, if I can kind of throw it to you here on the types of things that you see out there. Is this just the stranger who breaks in because they know that the elder person is living by themselves and may have something of value? Or sometimes does this really involve people that the victim knows?
More times than not, it's somebody that the victim knows. It's a relative, caregiver, family member, neighbor. It is somebody that they trust.
Okay. And Twyla Sketchley, I remember something. This has stuck with me for years. A discussion you and I had when we were doing a story on elder abuse. And this was, I think, an elderly lady out around Afuniak Springs. That horrific situation. There was a judge in the pocket of a family member, had them declared incompetent. I mean, this was a huge conspiracy to strip this person of everything that they owned. Does this happen a lot?
The extent of that case was pretty egregious because it was a small community. But the abuse by family members happens quite frequently, and it's not always what we picture as abuse. And that's the thing. We have a picture of abuse in our mind of some, you know, mentally ill or drug-addled mean guy standing over grandma demanding money under the threat of violence. But that's not always what happens. Oftentimes, it's a stressed-out caregiver who's been providing 24-hour-a-day care, who's lost their job, who has no money, they haven't slept, and, you know, they're at their wit's end. So when grandma asks for the 19th time in the day what time it is, that person snaps and slaps them. And that's one kind of abuse. There's the other kind of abuse where, you know, this person who is the caregiver is the, and I'm doing air quotes, caregiver, because they need the money of that elderly person. So they're providing quote-unquote care so that they can get the Social Security check. And it's not abuse like we think. It is, if you don't give me Social Security, I'm going to put you in the nursing home. And that is the number one fear of the people that I work with when I step into a situation. That elderly person would much rather be in the hands of an abuser than in a nursing home. As irrational as that sounds to all of us sitting at this table and most of our audience, that's what we confront.
And at the same time, though, there are many situations in which assisted living or long-term care is really the only logical option. And Mike Milliken, if we can talk about your role there in the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, folks who are looking for a proper facility for an older relative or someone who depends on them, they don't have to just shoot in the dark. You folks have some resources to help that selection too, right?
That's correct. We do annual assessments on each long-term care facility in the state of Florida. If someone is looking into a particular facility, they could always call our local office and get the information of how our last assessment went, what items we found that needed to be corrected, were there any items that needed to be corrected. The Agency for Healthcare Administration also has a website, floridahealthfinder.gov. We can do research on all facilities in the state also.
And you folks also do investigations if there are allegations, or at least can get the enforcement mechanism working in case there are allegations of abuse at that level too, right?
Correct. We'll take calls for abuse, neglect, and exploitation from anybody in reference to a resident in a long-term care facility. And we'll go out and we'll do an investigation. We will also encourage the reporter to call Adult Protective Services Adult Abuse Hotline and report it there also.
Okay. Given the demographics that we have here in Florida, and we are one of the more elder states in the nation as far as the division of their age bracketing that we have here in Florida, it would seem that there would be more opportunities for this type of thing to happen. Laura?
That is correct. Our aging population continues to grow, and we've seen an upward trend in statistics of reported cases of abuse, neglect, and exploitation over the years. They keep increasing with the increasing population.
Okay. Now, you talked about also putting some mechanisms in place, though, to mitigate, to handle these kinds of things. What are some of those?
So as the Elder Abuse Prevention Coordinator for 14 counties in the Panhandle Big Bend region, I'm capable of traveling to all 14 of those counties and working with case managers, working with direct service workers, working with AmeriCorps volunteers, so on, nurses, just letting them know what to look for signs, indicators of abuse, neglect, exploitation, what these things look like, and also tell them ways that they can report. In the state of Florida, we're all mandatory reporters. So if you suspect elder abuse, it's your citizenly duty to report that to Adult Protective Services, to their abuse hotline. Excuse me.
Yeah, because I think a lot of folks do not realize that that is a mandatory situation. If you see something, say something. It's the law.
Yes.
And I would like to point out that not every state has an all-citizen mandatory reporting scheme. We are one of a few states where all citizens are mandatory reporters. So if you know your neighbor is being abused by their son, you have to report it. And there are penalties for failing to report. Places like Colorado and other states, there's a list of mandatory reporters, which are usually social workers, physicians, EMTs, things like that. But your regular citizen, if they see something, they should say something. But there are not penalties for failure to report. In Florida, there are penalties for failure to report.
Okay, so each one of us has that responsibility under law to do that. And I imagine that there are probably a lot of folks who do not realize that and that there might be more reporting if that were more commonly known. As with so many things, the law changes all the time, and that can be confusing for a lot of folks, even those of us who follow this on a day-to-day basis.
And I want to talk about one of the significant things that Florida did in 2014. One of the things that people don't understand is there are two types of abuse, neglect, and exploitation statutes in our state. There are the civil statutes, which are protective statutes, which when we call in the 1-800-96-ABUSE, which is the hotline that you call in to report, and Wendy's organization goes out to investigate and remove people from dangerous and harmful situations, those are civil protective statutes. Florida has also criminal statutes. There are states that do not have the same sort of scheme. Our criminal statutes were improved significantly in 2014. I sat on that task force with Adult Protective Services and law enforcement, and we have some of the most incredible criminal prosecution statutes for abuse, neglect, and exploitation in the United States. And they include things like twisted heart exploitation schemes where someone meets an elderly person and they suddenly start getting loans and gifts from this person in huge amounts.
Ooh, we want to get into that when we get to the other side of this break here on Perspectives, talking about elder abuse and the resources available in the community and beyond to take care of that. Give us a call at 414-1234. We'll be right back. Hey, we are back on Perspectives. Thank you so much for joining us via the radio waves. And if the telephone line is your preferred means of communication, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809 if it's long distance. And a reminder, too, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to that address on the internet, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and click Perspectives, because we archive past shows and we try to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs. So by close of business today, we ought to have that up of what we are talking with right now. And if you're just joining us, we have with us Laura Copeland and Wendy Fletcher Altman and Mike Milliken and Twyla Sketchley, all talking about elder abuse and how that has become a huge focus of response, I think, on the part of the state and the local and everything else. Wendy Fletcher Altman, as far as your organization is concerned, going out and doing some of these investigative things here, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? That may be a leading question, but I mean, or just among some of the worst things that you've seen without mentioning any names or any litigious stuff there.
I think it's the self-neglect cases, the vulnerable adult is now a widow or widower and just kind of becomes a recluse in their own home, and they aren't going out to get food. They're not getting their medications. They're just kind of in their own home, withering away, not realizing that there are people out there that care about them and the resources that can come into the home to help them with housekeeping and deliver Meals on Wheels every day. And so I think that those are, you know, just the saddest of the sad, because they just have completely given up hope and don't feel like anybody cares about them. And that is not true at all. We have a table full of people that care for all of our seniors in the community every day.
Yeah, but it's so tough, particularly in cases where we have in Florida so many retirees who have come from Michigan and Ohio and other places. They really don't have much in the way of a social support mechanism, particularly when one of the spouses or one of the members of the couple dies. And it's so easy to fall into that. And, you know, old Joe or Martha or whatever, they just do. They just waste away and nobody knows. How do we handle that as a community? You know, without, as you said, Wendy, having a Meals on Wheels volunteer who pops in every day just to check up on them.
I think it's just, you know, if you have neighbors, make sure you check on them. You know, go be friendly in your community. Know who your neighbors are. Know who the senior citizens are in your community. You know, it's maybe as simple as going for a Saturday walk. You see an elderly lady sitting on her porch. Go up and talk to her. Engage with her. That may be the only communication she has that day with somebody from the outside. That's our duty. And as senior citizens, they've earned that from us. We owe it to them, in my opinion.
Okay. Back to the whole idea of assisted living and that kind of thing, Mike Milliken. What kind of, I guess, process do you guys go through the ombudsman program to determine, okay, what's a good nursing home? What's one that maybe could stand some improvement? And here's one that is just absolutely glorious and wonderful.
We have an assessment process. Our assessment process is resident-based, where we enter the facility, and of course we let them know that we're there. We speak with a number of residents in the facility. We have a series of questions that we will ask, and of course we'll let them add to it whatever they like, just to kind of gauge how they feel they're being treated, how they like the activities, are there different activities they'd like to see, are they getting their medications okay, are they being treated with dignity and respect. So our assessment is focused all the way through on just the residents. It's what they're telling us, how they find their living conditions.
Okay. I noticed that there was one right here in Leon County. There is a new extended care facility that is being permitted even as we speak. That one is going to focus on folks with some cognitive impairments, dementia, and all that kind of thing. That must make that assessment more difficult when you're dealing with that kind of criteria, right?
It does make it a little more difficult. What we would do is we would go in, we would look at the general conditions within the facility, kind of see the residents, still speak with them because they're still residents there, ask them how they're doing, try to get as much information as we can from them, see how they're dressed, are they groomed, is the facility being kept up. We'll also try to contact family members and see how they feel that their loved one is being treated.
Okay. Laura Copeland, that whole idea of assisted living and the very last thing, as Wendy had intimated, that a lot of folks, that's the horror. They're going to put me in a home. How do we deal with that? And I think a lot of folks even have the guilt. Oh, you know, I'd rather just take care of mom here, even if that person's being – it's too difficult. You don't have the resources really to handle all the needs there.
They're welcome to call my office. We have something called the Elder Helpline. If someone is struggling or looking for other resources in their community, as I mentioned previously, we cover 14 counties, and there is an entity like my office, another area agency on aging, somewhere else in the state. There are 11 offices like ours. We have something called the Elder Helpline, and that number is 1-800-963-5337. They're welcome to reach out to one of our Elder Helpline specialists, or also just get the conversation started. Find the root of that issue. And I know, I think Twyla mentioned it earlier, nursing home placement is a huge fear. But like she said, the victim may be dependent on their abuser. So find other resources available for that victim out there that could greatly help their situation.
Donna wants to add to the conversation here on Perspectives. We sure appreciate that. Hi, Donna. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, panel. I have a quick question. Hypothetically speaking, let's say I have a patient who I've known for quite a while and I'm familiar with their extended family circumstances. So if I suspect that there's another family member pulling a twisted heart scenario on grandma, do I have a duty to report? Of course, this would just be based on the hearsay of my patient.
Wow, that's a great question. What? How do we handle that? Because it may be not. It may be none of my business. Twyla, what?
We're all sitting here. Our heads are shaking. In Florida, if you have reason to believe that someone is being abused, neglected, or exploited, you have a duty to report it. Now, when you report it, it doesn't mean you have to have facts. You don't have to say, I saw the guy standing over her demanding her Social Security. What you have to have is reason to believe. If you have reason to believe, you have to report it. Your report is anonymous. They will ask you your name and your contact information. They will not provide this to the perpetrator or the family or the victim. But you do have to report it. It is anonymous. And here's the beauty of it. Wendy's organization has investigators that go out and investigate it. There are deadlines that they have to complete their investigation. And if there's nothing to it, then there's nothing to it and the investigation is closed. But if there is something to it, Wendy's organization takes protective actions. They can refer it to the state attorney. If it's a situation where the person is in danger and needs protection, they can go to court and they can take protective action. If it's a situation where it may be better that some other family members step in and take protective action like a guardianship, they can go see a private attorney and start a guardianship proceeding to protect grandma. So yes, you do have to report it. And once that's done, whatever protective actions that need to be taken will be taken by the entities, and it's no longer an issue that you have to grapple with.
I'm just thinking because there was a situation I remember when I was growing up, the lady who lived next door to my grandmother, she'd be sitting out on her porch, and I'd be playing in Graham's backyard, and she'd say, oh, I got some cookies. And, oh, boy, I was a sucker for cookies, and I'd go over. And this lady, I recall that I must have been probably 6 or 7 years old. She would tell me of the horrific things that her son did to her. Just terrible, horrible things. And I'd go home and tell Graham, oh, you know, Mrs. Smith next door, she told me about all this. And my Graham would roll her eyes and she'd say, she says that all the time. Her son loves her and wouldn't do anything to hurt her. And that's why I'm wondering, Wendy, you got to get some of those too that, you know, is there any there? And how do you determine that?
Well, when we go out, one of the things that drives our investigation is whether and a vulnerable adult has capacity to consent. And that means that they know who, what, when, where they are. They're able to protect themselves and they're able to give us enough information for us to determine that they're able to advocate basically for themselves. And if we go out and they have capacity and they tell us they don't want any services, nothing's going on, they don't want us to contact their doctors, no family, we have to shut the investigation down because they have that is their right. If we go out and they lack capacity, then we're contacting doctors, family members to figure out how we're going to best protect them. So, you know, it could have been a case where she did have some dementia, and things that are Alzheimer's and, you know, things that happened in the past, those are the things that they remember. They're not recalling current events when they have Alzheimer's. So those could have been things that very much happened to her, but it wasn't as widely known back then, and it was more of a family issue. That's their family business. You don't need to deal with that. Now, today, we have other mechanisms in place to protect our vulnerable citizens.
Boy, that makes your job tough, though. You have to peel those layers of the onion to find out what's really going on there.
Yes, but we enjoy what we do because we know that we're saving and protecting our senior citizens.
Mike Milliken, same thing with nursing homes and assisted care facilities, because you will have people say, oh, the food is horrible. They take us out and torture us every day. You know, you think, no, maybe not here.
Well, everyone has a different perspective of what is and what isn't. So we really do have to look at it from the individual's point of view. if one resident wants something and nobody else wants it, is it something we really want to do? Do we want to have the facility change one of their operations because of one person? Well, we want that one person to be satisfied, so maybe there's something else that we can do for them.
Okay. All right. Well, that would seem to be logical then. Laura, in your situation, though, how do you see, I guess, the awareness of this growing that, oh, my gosh, yeah, as a community, there may be problems that we now realize, having listened to this show, we have the legal obligation to do something about.
I found that in doing outreach, people who work in the field or who work with elders, they're very interested in what I have to say. When I'm out at health fairs tabling with information, I have tons of brochures. All of my literature and little tchotchkes have the number for the abuse hotline. Oftentimes, seniors pass by my table without stopping, and I'll be like, hey, I have great stuff for you, very useful information. Oh, I don't need that. Said, you might one day, or if not for you, then for your neighbor or for a friend. We have fridge magnets that can stick on your refrigerator with the number for the abuse hotline. Hopefully, people will never have to make that call or report it, but we have that available. I have tons of literature that I'm able to distribute, and people aren't always open to receiving it because they don't think it's going to happen to them. So trying to prevent that from ever happening, but we have great resources on hand for people to have.
Or as Wendy indicated, too, you're dealing sometimes with older folks to whom, oh, we don't get involved with that. We don't mess with other people's family. That is sacrosanct, and that's their business. That's not something for us. And did you bump into that, Twyla, in your deals?
Oh, we do. We call it the Nunyas. It's none your business.
None your.
What I try to convey, and I speak to community groups a lot, and it's a little easier if you tell them that you have to look out for your own herd. Because that's really what it is. And you can look in your own group, whether it be your church or your civic organization or your neighborhood organization, and you can look for the signs. Is there a person in your herd? Because you're a herd and you got to protect the vulnerable in your own herd. Is there somebody who is suddenly not sitting next to you in the pew anymore? Is there somebody who, when they are sitting next to you in the pew, they suddenly smell really awful, and they're in the same suit, and you can clearly see it's got yesterday and the day before soup on the front of it? Are they, you went to visit them, and the newspapers are piled up outside their door, and, you know, you can start looking at these things. When they're out with a caregiver, is that caregiver yanking them around? Is their hair dirty? Is this a person who suddenly has a new friend that won't let them talk to anybody else in church without that person being right there? I mean, there are signs that you need to look for in your own circle of people. And if you tell people that they should look out for their own circle, it's a little easier for them to do that than that stranger that they just saw in Publix. So if you make it more home, they're more likely to do it. But yeah, you it is a little more difficult. I look at this at the way we used to look at beating your wife. For a long time, it was just something. I mean, I grew up and my dad had a couple of friends he used to tell these horror stories about their mother being beaten. Now we would be horrified and we'd go tell somebody. I look at how we are starting to look at elder abuse and elder maltreatment in the same way. And so if we were to start looking at it from that perspective, we would see, yeah, we do need to intervene, because if you saw somebody in, you know, down your neighborhood smacking around their wife, you would intervene. Well, why wouldn't you do the same if they were doing that to grandma?
Good point. What about some of the external threats that might be out there? I'm just following up on something we ran this morning. This was an IRS scam, and particularly – Wendy, in Bay County, Sheriff's Office over there is constantly sending us notifications that, boy, this is out there. And a lot of older folks are falling prey to this because they have a tendency to be a little bit less cynical about some of these things. Someone calls up, says they're with, for example, the IRS, and that they owe a whole bunch of back taxes because of a miscalculation. And if they don't take care of it right away, someone's going to come and arrest them and seize their property and all that kind of thing. Is that part of the deal, too, to also try to spread the word amongst the senior population that there are folks out there who are more than willing to take their money?
Yes. And we Yes. And you're right. The Bay County Sheriff's Office is wonderful at doing that. Just remember, the IRS is never going to call you. Bottom line. We have a lot of them that do fall into the trap of the scams. On the phone, you send us $500 and we'll send you a new car. Well, after some $2,000, you still haven't gotten that car. That car, chances are, is not coming to you. Quit taking their phone calls. So when we get calls like that, we automatically call law enforcement. We try to have law enforcement go out with us to help educate that victim, because they're not – they have been completely sucked into that person on the other end. Calling them, they think that they're their friend. They're not your friend. They're calling you. You're giving them something. You're getting nothing in return. So if anybody calls you, call your sheriff's department, call your local police department, and they will be able to tell you if this is a scam or not.
Okay. And I'm thinking also like the roof repair thing. You get a storm like what we had this past week, and a truck will suddenly show up and, oh, we noticed that you have a little problem with your roof. We'll take care of it for you.
Mm-hmm. Home repair fraud.
Oh, there you go. And that's got to be part of your thing too, Laura.
It is. I have a whole brochure just on that.
Oh, boy.
Well, and I want to say that one of the things that, you know, the Department of Elder Affairs, the area agencies on aging have really good resources for that. Also, Department of Agriculture and Consumer Affairs has the Little Black Book of Scams. And it has on the web a list of all the scams that are currently being perpetrated against Florida's citizens. And so if you think something is a scam, go with your gut. It is. That's what I tell all my clients. And then go look it up. Go over on the website, and it's probably there. I tell my clients, if you think it's a scam, it is. The lottery won't hunt you down and ask you for money. And you don't have to pay taxes on your sweepstakes. The IRS will never call you. So any of those things happen, you're being scammed.
Words to the wise here on Perspectives, talking about elder abuse and neglect and isolation, too. And we'll talk more when we continue in just a moment. Back on Perspectives with Laura Copeland and Wendy Fletcher Altman, Mike Milliken, and Twyla Sketchley. The horrific kinds of abuse and neglect and terrible things that can happen to older folks, and the community resources that are available to address those situations sometimes in advance. We were just coming off of the whole scams thing, and we remembered the name of the movie, Nebraska, with Bruce Dern, where he won a lottery, some kind of a scam. And boy, he was determined to get to the office to collect his prize. And he kept sneaking away from the house. I think Bruce was portraying
dementia.
Someone with a little cognitive problem there. And man, he was going to get there. And even when he arrived and found out that the hat was the only thing that he had won, still in the back of his mind, he had won somehow.
Yep.
And that is tough, too, when you're fighting with older folks maybe who, on one hand, you want to protect, but they are incapable of helping protect themselves at that point. How do you deal with those situations, guys?
Well, in my office, oftentimes we have to have family members resort to a guardianship. Where a family member or the whole family goes to court and has the person determined incapacitated, and a guardian is appointed, and the right for them to send thousands of dollars to a scammer who's told them they've won the lottery is taken away. That's a last resort, and it's the resort that nobody wants to – you know, it's the event nobody wants to have happen. But oftentimes, that's the only way to stop some of this stuff. I mean, we currently have a case now where a son has, as far as we can tell, stolen at least $350,000. And the only way we could stop it was having mom declared incapacitated and removing the right for her to use her own money. And that's been delegated to her son. And so from now on, the son is going to pay the bills. He's going to have to sue the brother, and he's not going to recover anything because, as I like to say, if you're exploiting your mom, you're not putting it in your 401k. So, you know, that's a harsh reality that sometimes family members have to face, is the only way to protect mom is to do something that most people think is a, you know, very undignified thing to do to her.
Yeah, but that is the form of abuse there that leaves no marks, at least no physical marks. And when we were talking about abuse and all of that, there very often are physical indicators that something like that is going on. In this case, if the kids come swooping in because dad just died, mom's got the, you know, all the assets, and why wait for mom to leave? Let's take them now. That happens too, right? And how often does that happen? Anybody?
I mean, I see it quite often, but as I like to point out, I'm at the crisis end of these things. So, you know, if a family's handling it well, I never see them generally. Some national statistics that are quite shocking about financial exploitation or financial abuse of the elderly. In the United States, every year, elders lose about $3 billion a year to financial exploitation or financial abuse. $3 billion a year. There are studies that show that even if you're just – and I'm quoting, you know, doing quotes – just a victim of financial exploitation, you are still going to suffer some pretty severe medical problems due to the stress related to that. So if you figure in the case that I just described, if you look at that, this is a person who's essentially lost their life savings. So – you know, we say that that's not really abuse, but how is this person going to get their basic needs met? I mean, their food, shelter, clothing, and medical care is gone unless we turn to community resources. The taxpayers pay for their long-term care is essentially what happens. So as a community, from a policy perspective, we should be mad when this happens. We should be mad when law enforcement doesn't arrest these people. We should be mad when state attorneys don't prosecute these people. And, you know, I see that pretty regularly. I'm often told by law enforcement, oh, well, this is just a civil matter, when in fact it is a crime. And I'm often told that it's too hard to prosecute this because it's a complicated crime. And it's a crime we should all be mad about, because in the case I just described, when she runs out of what little money she has left, you and I as taxpayers are going to be paying $9,000 to $12,000 a month for her long-term care. And she has dementia, so she will be going into a long-term care situation where she's going to live approximately 3 years if statistics hold out.
Which is very, very expensive. And speaking of expenses, do the resources, the things that we have in place as far as area agencies on aging and Department of Children and Families and the Ombudsman Program and all these sorts of things, do you guys have everything you need to address these sorts of things? Without getting into lobbying, we are not, you know, going to bring in members of the legislature and put it to them here. But everyone needs more. But how deficient are you guys in what you need to do the job?
Well, elder abuse prevention is under the Older Americans Act, which is a federal program. We do have some funds for this program. Like I said, there are 11 other entities like myself in the state of Florida. Not going to name a number here, but it's not substantial. And I'm the coordinator for 14 counties supposed to provide this information. I'm not knocking Department of Elder Affairs. They provide those funds for us, but we could always use more funds for
sure.
This issue.
Yeah, and it is always just a matter of policy priority when it comes to whether it's local or state or national government or anything like that. I'm sure, Wendy, you could use some additional help there too. But what is the most pressing need, I guess, for you guys beyond the fact, yeah, give us more money. That's wonderful. But what could you use more of?
Volunteers, guardians. You know, if you're retired and you want something to do, we are always looking for guardians. As Twyla said, you know, when they go to court and have somebody determined incapacitated, they need a guardian appointed. Sometimes a family member is not available to do that. So we look at professional guardians to take on that role. And we are always in need of professional guardians. You know, we need, like I said, we need more funds for in-home services, for companionship, for homemaking, for personal care, more volunteers to deliver Meals on Wheels. There's a plethora of services that we need provided to our elders, and there's just not enough people. There's not enough agencies to provide that. Sometimes the Medicaid, Medicare that they have does not cover those services. So, you know, it's always a great need for our elders in the community.
Yeah, last time we talked with Mark Baldino over at Elder Care Services, he was talking about how the amount of federal help for that program had just really been decimated in the past several years. Now they're going with a lot of community fundraisers just to keep enough folks delivering the Meals on Wheels that go out to thousands of people here in the Big Bend area. So Ombudsman Office, Mike, what's the deal there?
Well, our biggest need is for volunteers. 98% of our cases are investigated by volunteers who we train. So we can always use more volunteers.
Okay. How many do you have on staff right now?
I don't have the exact number. It's in the high 300s.
Wow.
So and that's statewide.
And when you consider the number of nursing homes, assisted living facilities, all that, and more being built every day.
The need is definitely growing. Every time I drive down the road, I see a new facility on this road or a new facility in this town. So the more facilities that are created, the more residents they have, the more ombudsmen that we need to assist these residents.
Yeah, demographics not our friend there. Not only the number, and we're now back to 1,000 people a day moving to Florida, and many of them are 65 plus. So that need is going to obviously continue. And Twyla, you need more clients or what?
Well, I as the individual here who is not attached to a state agency, I'm going to step in and say that these three agencies that are sitting here are woefully underfunded. You don't understand how much these three agencies do with the pittance that our legislature gives them. And in my opinion, and this is solely my opinion, the Florida legislature does not make our vulnerable adults a priority. When I sat on the task force to change our exploitation laws to protect our aging population, we were told we could do anything unless it required money. If it required money, we could not do it. So that tells you something. So when these folks are sitting here saying that they're doing everything they can with the money they have, they really are. I mean, these are folks who are begging for volunteers. So it's an election season, and folks in our community, you need to look at your folks who are running, because our legislators and our administration who are all running for reelection, they have turned down federal money that would have helped our seniors, and they've turned it down because it's been associated with particular programs that they don't like for a political reason. They're putting our elders in danger for political reasons. These folks that are sitting around these tables and their volunteers are absolute heroes, in my opinion. And I'm not saying that lightly. I mean, I've witnessed what the long-term care ombudsman's volunteers do when they go out and investigate these people. And I have seen them rescue horribly abused individuals from bad assisted living facilities. Volunteers, people who are not paid, have done that. I have seen DCF investigators who are paid so much that as state people we should be ashamed of ourselves rescue people who have been stuck to the floor in their own vomit, because that was on a case I was on, so I want to say your investigators were amazing. They were rescuing people who were nearly died, left abandoned by bad people. I've seen what the Elder Helpline can do for stressed out caregivers. I can't say enough about what these people are doing, and what our legislature gives these organizations is so little they should be ashamed of themselves.
And given the fact that nothing changes unless you have an informed and an active electorate, if this sounds like a priority that you would like to impart to elected officialdom, Twyla said it. Now is your opportunity. You have people who are running for state and local office because there are local resources that also can be marshaled on this, whether it's the faith community in conjunction with city and county governmental agencies, all of that sort of thing. It's a good chance on these candidate forums, of which there are a multitude out there, to hold these candidates' feet to the fire and say, what do you think of this? And how do you think this ought to be made a priority if you are elected to these positions? It's amazing what you can do when you put a little bit of pressure on soon-to-be-elected officials in advance of that and then hold their feet to the fire after the election.
You should also be asking your state attorney candidates and your sheriff's candidates how they're going to be combating the crimes against our elders in our community, because many communities do very little in terms of targeted efforts to prevent crimes against the elder. And you would not believe how many times my families and my office goes to law enforcement on a regular basis with absolute exploitation under Florida's criminal exploitation statutes, and we are told it's a civil matter and they can do nothing about it, or the prosecutors will say there's nothing we can do about it, and that is absolutely not true. And when exploiters get away with it, we are paying for it.
We only have a few minutes left in this morning's Perspectives program as we've been talking about the proliferation of elder abuse and neglect and isolation and exploitation and all of those sorts of things, and the resources that are being marshaled to mitigate that situation and to keep our older community folks safe. Laura Copeland, any final thoughts from you as Elder Abuse Prevention Coordinator for Planning and Service Area 2 of the Area Agency on Aging for North Florida, Inc.?
Always. Next Wednesday, June 15th, is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. So if you're not able to attend any community events, I encourage everyone who's listening to wear purple on that day. Purple is the color of elder abuse prevention, as worldwide, the color purple is recognized as a symbol of dignity, respect, royalty, and that is how we need to be treating our elders. We do have an event on Monday, June 13th at the Tallahassee Senior Center. If you're in the area and would like to stop by, please do. It's from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Also wear purple to that event. But if you're able to observe or do anything in recognition of World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, be it start this conversation with a friend, a colleague, a neighbor, a family member, anything to get the word out that this is happening and we can prevent it. The slogan that we use is that the power to prevent elder abuse is in your hands, because you do have the ability to prevent it.
And you're such an effective spokesperson. If anyone would like to invite you to, say, a community luncheon organization.
I would love to be there. I would love to speak to you. I have all sorts of different presentations and trainings for different types of groups, professionals, nurses, bank people and financial institutions, just community members, direct service workers, any and everything, you name it, I will be there.
Final thought to Wendy Fletcher Altman.
Like she said, June 15th is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. Wear your purple. Get to know your seniors. Make them your friends. We owe it to them. They're the reasons that we're here. So protect them, please, daily. Reach out.
Mike Milligan, Florida Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program.
Well, I'll just say, if you have a concern about a loved one or a friend in a long-term care facility, to give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-888-831-0404. That'll connect you to the closest office to your location. And you can file a complaint, and we'll go out and take a look at it.
Terrific. Thank you. And Twyla Sketchley, before you go barreling out of here to hop in that car and head down to Tampa to the convention of elder law attorneys here.
I want to remind everybody, we are all mandatory reporters. So if you have reason to believe someone in your community is abused, call 1-800-96-ABUSE and report it. I would also like to say that in honor of World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, every church, community organization, and neighborhood organization should set up a group that reaches out at least once a week to the elders in their community, if it's nothing more, to check and make sure that they're still in their home and okay.
All right. And you have that website that's going online quickly,
right? Oh, yes.
Right?
It's the Sketchley Method. It'll be going online shortly, and it will have resources. It will include the current report lines for abuse, neglect, and exploitation in all 50 states.
Folks, it's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you all for coming out to Perspectives today. And let's look out more for the folks who have done so much to make us who we are today, right?
Yes.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls, handling calls and emails today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Hey, since the 1980s, Leon County's election supervisors frequently found himself on the national stage when it comes to advancing voting rights and battling attempts to restrict the voting process. Now in the final months of his last term in office, next week, Ion Sancho for the full hour right here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.